Great to have you here. Welcome. In the next part of this episode, you will find an excerpt from my latest book, You Are Me and I Am You, The Most Valuable Insight of Existence. The plan is to read an excerpt to you every week until the book is finished. That will most likely happen before the end of this year. But first, a few words. I won't be speaking personally, and there are two reasons for this. Firstly, my English skills are currently only mediocre, which affects how the language sounds and is expressed. Secondly, I'm already speaking German, and since we both only have 24 hours in a day, I'm sure you understand. After all, this isn't about me, but about you. Therefore, I believe this approach is ultimately best for you, as it enables you to understand everything perfectly and enjoy the speaker's voices. One more thing. If I were financially secure, I would love to make the whole book available to you. But since I'm not, I have to earn a living too. You will therefore receive around 65% of the content each week as it is completed. If you would like to receive the unabridged version of this book in both audio and text formats, you will find all the necessary information in this podcast. I hope you'll take away many valuable insights from the following excerpts that will make you happier. Have a great time. Yours, Oleg.
You are me, and I am you. The Most Valuable Insight of Existence by Oleg Klutschko. 2026. All rights reserved.
Are you really ready to open Pandora's box? Think carefully, because once you open it, there's no turning back. If so, we would be very happy. When you do, know that I see myself, my family members, ancestors, friends, children, adversaries, and all other people and living beings on this planet in you. If there are living beings on other planets, include them as well.
You can read this book once and then put it aside, but you won't gain much from doing so. It is written in such a way that it should be read several times, even if you just open it to a random page every now and then and spend a few minutes with it. The author would also like to take this opportunity to express his gratitude to all those who have helped shape who he is today and who he will become tomorrow, as well as to God. To him, God is not an omnipotent entity that acts independently of us and created everything. Rather, God is an indefinable idea to him, implying that God is part of all living beings, as is customary with ideas. Therefore, God is something higher to him, something inexplicable and incomprehensible that is greater than himself. God has led him to people who, though it did not seem so at first, have significantly advanced his spiritual development. With God's help, we gained these insights and realized that they stemmed from his encounters with others. In quiet moments, we should look inward and remind ourselves that we owe our abilities to others, including those we have never met and those whose behavior we initially perceived as harmful. It is precisely these harms that have strengthened us. Consider the countless people who have simply vanished from our lives overnight. At the time, this felt like an insurmountable pain. In retrospect, however, it becomes clear that negative experiences strengthen our mental resilience and independence if we are capable of regular self-reflection. Ultimately, mental strength is the most useful quality in life. Don't you agree? Chile. The following conversation took place with Este, a Chilean woman known to everyone as the Wise One. Encouraged by my dear teacher Rinpoche, I attended the campfire talks she gave. Although I was already aware that everything is connected, I did not fully understand the extent of this until I heard Este speak. Her words
changed my worldview. The conversation that evening went as follows.
Why are you looking at me so strangely? Don't you realize that I am you, merely in a different physical form?
What's the point of one being dividing itself into countless bodies, making it so difficult for each body to recognize the others as itself?
It wants to lead itself as countless embodied beings to enlightenment. What other purpose could there be?
How can most people behave as if the concept of enlightenment were no more connected to them than the moon is to the book in my pocket, when they are ultimately only manifestations of the One?
Your book is no less connected to the moon than your fingers are to your hand. In that case, you shouldn't worry about those people. See yourself in everyone else as if you were in a different disguise. People whose life's purpose is to lead you to enlightenment. Imagine that everyone you have met and will meet is, in reality, an actor.
But what defines an actor?
They are themselves during the performance, even when playing a role.
You're quite right. We're all playing a role when we communicate with you. This role is intended solely to lead you to enlightenment.
Before we continue, one more thing. Aside from the teachings of my master Rinpoche, this book is no longer about me. It is about the deep connection we all share and how it manifests. Now, let us unravel the mystery of why we are everyone else, even if only superficially at first. As Buddha, Krishna, and Jesus taught us, and as Buddhism most effectively conveys, our own minds create the separation between I and you, as well as every other separation, such as the one between us and the moon or a book. Figuratively speaking, it's like a landscape we're looking at. What we see is unity, a single phenomenon. However, when we think, here I see water, there I see a forest, and above I see the sky, our thoughts create multiple phenomena. To better understand this, imagine the artist blending these phenomena into one another, leaving only blurred outlines that cannot be defined clearly. If we were to glance at the picture briefly, we might say, I see the sky, and on the left, it looks like a forest. In this case, water would not exist as an independent phenomenon. So what makes water exist? Our thoughts, in the form of judgments, evaluations, and names, make it exist. If only what is perceived existed, judgments and names would not exist if perception alone existed. This is exactly what Nagarjuna once noted. By defining a you, the I manifests itself. As previously mentioned, the artist's image is a self-contained phenomenon. In reality, however, there is only one such phenomenon, the universe, the world. This means that all other phenomena, though understood as individual and unconnected, are ultimately not. But why does it seem that way to us? It's because our senses are unable to perceive the world as a whole. Why can't our senses perceive the world as a whole? Because we ourselves are this one entity. Only in this way can we play the game of life. Otherwise, we wouldn't enjoy it. It would be boring. Este also told me this. Conversely, this means that we do not enter life by chance
or without our consent. We set the cause ourselves on the original, first level. But why do we do that? The reason has already been mentioned and should be restated. Life as a human being is the best that the world has to offer. There is simply nothing better. As the first cause, we would die of boredom if we didn't manifest as different phenomena and living beings in this world.
How we are connected. Part 1. The obvious signs. Claiming that we are all connected in some way would be wrong. The truth is that physical separation only exists within our limited perception, as we will discover. This separation exists only within the realm of reality that our limited senses can perceive. Through careful observation and analysis of our reactions to others, we gain numerous insights. One such insight is that a person can trigger certain reactions simply by being present. For example, a person's presence in a waiting room can elicit reactions. According to the truth discussed in this text, it cannot be otherwise. Those who pay little attention to their spiritual development often spend days thinking about the fleeting reactions of people they know, such as family members, friends, or co-workers. A few seconds of interaction can influence someone who doesn't try to increase their mindfulness. This alters their daily actions, communication, and habits for days or weeks. This happens anyway, as we will see, since continuous change is the only constant in the universe. Most people experience profound changes that last months or years when they lose loved ones to death or separation. In general, people who live in close proximity to one another, such as in a large city, influence each other more. However, as we will see shortly, there are only disadvantages to this. First, consider the factors that shape who we are. Our fellow human beings play a primary role in shaping who we are. In modern societies, this applies equally to the living and the deceased. Even people who live in such a society and are not personally acquainted with the deceased are influenced by their actions. Their works and ideas inspire and interest others, including people who write books, build structures, create art, and educate like-minded individuals. Let's spend half a day answering the following question. To what extent have others shaped me into the person I am today? In doing so, we will realize that the people who have profoundly impacted us through books, lines of thought, conversations, teachers, relatives, friends, neighbors, partners, and children live on within us. Without these influences, we would be completely different people, bearing no resemblance to our current selves. Those who don't make an effort to discover who they truly are won't find the previous sentence amusing. However, we should discover who we truly are because it's contradictory to claim that we're different people despite having grown up in entirely different ways. These lines are meant to help us see through the I, which preoccupies us more than anything else, and realize its non-existence. Once we realize that the I is merely an idea, a concept, an illusion, we are nearly free from suffering. However, we only experience complete freedom from suffering, and thus lasting happiness, when we recognize that our thoughts are empty too. We will return to this later. What kind of suffering does the author describe? He describes the general suffering of a life with limited free will. Such a life is marked by fears, worries, doubts, problems, and feelings of inferiority. It is also marked by old age, illness, and death. However, this suffering can only be fully resolved through a moment of enlightenment,
as described by Buddhist masters like Gendun Rinpoche, whose body is united with the cosmos while his spirit continues to teach, and Hindu yogis like Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana Maharshi. Baird T. Spaulding also wrote about the masters of the East and the imperishable, indestructible element that permeates our spirit. Rediscovering this principle through which God reveals himself to us is crucial because, as the wise man said, God is this principle itself. But where do most of our doubts, worries, and problems come from? They stem from our fellow human beings, the others. It's amazing how many insights we gain when we realize that the separation between us and the others is based solely on inattention, provided that we are mindful enough. Although these lines are intended for individuals who sense, though may not yet acknowledge, that the I is a mental construct, the following section will present three facts that support this view. First, the I can be compared to a house. As an entity that exists independently of the world, the house is an idea. If all of its parts, such as stone and wood, were laid on the ground, the house would cease to exist.
Second, if there were a real I, it could be located and described in our consciousness at any time. People who aren't paying attention look at an old photo and say, "That's what I used to look like." But they have changed so much, both physically and mentally, that they aren't anything like they were yesterday. We must recognize that we are inextricably linked to the rest of the world, including water, earth, fire, air, bacteria, fungi, and stones. Therefore, the concept of the self should encompass the entire universe. As a daily practice, one could select an element and ask, "How am I connected to this element?" Let's briefly do this exercise now, starting with a wooden table. What is wood? Wood comes from trees, which provide us with oxygen. Without oxygen, we would never have evolved. How are we connected to a stone? First, we share a common origin. Both stones and our bodies are made of the same elements found in the universe. Second, we are connected through interdependence. A stone does not exist in isolation. Rather, it is the result of geological processes that span time and space, just like us. Third, stones fundamentally influence us. For millennia, people have been building houses out of stone. Why do people feel compelled to collect stones, even small pebbles on the beach? The earth consists of billions of stones, without which life would not be possible. Since the universe is an undivided whole, no human, object, sentient being, or element ever changes alone. Based on the truth that the world is a unity, everything changes together. Now, let's briefly explore the concept of shunyata, a Sanskrit term meaning emptiness. According to this concept, all things, both living and non-living, depend on causes and conditions. If the conditions change, the things change too. Otherwise, neither the climate, nature, our fellow human beings, nor other living beings could influence us. However, the climate must influence us because the separation between us and the climate or nature is purely conceptual, like any other separation. This chapter aims to provide further evidence for the main thesis by offering insight into the following. When we consciously alter our mental state, the way others react to us changes as well. Of course, our mental state also changes on its own. However, people who are suffering and not actively pursuing self-realization generally do not notice these changes. For instance, if we choose to be peaceful and never initiate an argument,
undoubtedly the first step to happiness, no one will try to argue with us. Furthermore, when thoughts leave no trace in the mind, the entire world becomes a peaceful place for those who experience this state. Wherever they go, they encounter peace, respect, appreciation, and love. Because we all influence one another, restless and unfriendly people become calm and peaceful when they encounter us in a state of pure awareness. However, that's not the whole story. The very thing that connects them also keeps them, for restless souls can only encounter balanced people once they themselves have found peace. Someone who had just begun to understand the profound truth about themselves asks someone else who had already gained this insight, "But you always say I too." The other person replied, "In my understanding of I, you are included."